Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, sponsored by the audiobook edition of Will Eisner, A Spirited Life, now available on iTunes and Audible.com, and of course recorded live on blogtalkradio.com from the new media and American League Baseball capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. I am old enough to remember what a sensation Stan Lee and John Buscema caused back in 1978 when the book How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way was published. That book promised to pull back the curtain and teach would-be comic book artists how the House of Ideas did things and how you could too. But that was then. This is now. In the digital age, knowing how to hold a pencil is so 1999. If you want to make it in comics today, you need a lot more technical skills and information. And that, no doubt, is why Freddie E. Williams II is going to do very well with his timely new instructional book, The DC Comics Guide to Digitally Drawing Comics. Now, Williams is already on a bit of a roll, having worked on the DC miniseries Countdown, as well as Robin, The Flash, and others for DC. And you can check out his work at his own website, www.freddieart.com. Freddie, welcome to Mr. Media.
Great. Thank you for having me on, and what an outstanding introduction. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm done now. I'll be leaving.
And I'm done. Yeah.
Well, you know, when you hear that the introduction went so well, you can only go downhill from there, right?
Well, I'm really excited to be on. Thank you very much.
No, my pleasure. It's a very cool book. And, you know, you don't waste any time in this book. Chapter one begins, and I quote, "Are you ready to throw your pencils and paper away?" Wow, Freddie.
Well, you certainly can if that's your goal. The DC Comics Guide to Digitally Drawing Comics covers how to work completely digital, which is how I draw the majority of my pages. For people who do still want to have some sort of originals at the end of the process, though, there is two different hybrid workflows, one for pencils and one for inks, that I also talk about in the book. So you don't have to throw away your pencils and paper, but you can if you desire to.
Well, and I want to ask you about original art a little bit later, because I know it's a big issue for comic artists and their income. But I mean, are pencils and paper truly done in comics? I mean, how many people, on a percentage basis, do you think are drawing their comics now digitally?
Ooh, good question. I think that there, I cannot give you an exact percentage or anything. I think there's a lot of people who are sampling different digital tools. So even if it might start with an inker who scans in their the inked page and just uses Photoshop to fill in large black areas or something like that to help speed them up. And I think that sort of thing is pretty widespread. Or pencilers who scan in their roughs and then make adjustments to it before they continue with the rest of the page traditionally. So. That sort of thing is pretty common. As far as fully digital, honestly, I'm not really for sure. I think that for years there's been there started to be a bit of a stigma that if you worked digitally, that there was that you could just hit a couple of buttons and it would draw everything for you, and that's just not true. There's still a lot of hard work. There's a whole other skill set involved in learning that. So I think that as we're moving, into 2010, basically, that stigma has fallen away, and now people, artists in general, are looking for new ways to get better end results faster, and working digitally really answers that.
Is it a generational thing? I mean, I'm thinking that Joe Kubert is probably not working digitally, but probably his students and maybe his sons are, for example.
Let's see. I would be surprised if Joe was working digitally. However, but I'm not really for sure. There's only been a few artists who I've read interviews that talk about working digitally. So, again, either artists that are working digitally are keeping those tips and tricks to themselves, or just not not talking about it or whatever, or they just haven't started yet. So I think that the students that are currently attending the Joe Kubert School are probably, they're the ones who are paying the most attention to it. They're just looking for new ways, and it's great to learn the old skill set. That's totally essential. But there's this whole other skill set that I think that they're probably, their eyes are open to.
So what I kind of imagine is that you are opening the door here, first of all, for a lot of people legitimizing digitally drawn comics, but also preparing that next generation and saying, hey, come on in, learn it this way, learn it, you know, be ready for the future.
Yeah, that was definitely my goal whenever I set out to write the book. It was not so much to say this is the only way to work digitally. It was more to say this is the way that I've been working digitally for, you know, several years now, and it works. And you don't have to do it exactly this way, but this is a good way to start and to learn in the process, and then from there start to make the workflow your own.
I was reading how you got into the business. It's very interesting. I don't want to give away too much of your story. I'm hoping you'll do it. But you went to San Diego Comic-Con in 2005, and well, tell us what happened there.
Yes, sir. I got in the front door. I didn't know anyone in the industry or anything. I submitted my art portfolio, my sequential art portfolio, in the DC Comics talent search, and the next day, my name was on the list. It was one of the five people, I think, that they had chosen to review. And then I had my review was with Richard Bruning, who is one of the executive art directors, I believe, over at DC. And he's a really nice guy. I was a little nervous because of that. Still, it's possible to have that perceived stigma about digital work. And about halfway, he looked through my portfolio, was very interested and very complimentary. We got about halfway through it, and that was when it was kind of convenient. There was a page that basically prompted me to mention that I worked digitally, and I was a little nervous about it, but he seemed excited by it and said, oh, really? And flipped all the way back to the beginning, and then we started talking about how I constructed pages digitally. He looked through the entire portfolio at that point, all talking about just the regular art stuff and the digital stuff. So even working digitally was really important, even at that early stage of getting in over at DC. And from there, a few months later is when I first started getting my work. It was just a couple of months later I got my first job on Seven Soldiers, Mr. Miracle from Peter Tomasi, and he was fine with me working digital. I think he said something like, you know, he didn't care how the work was produced as long as it looked good and it was on time. He could not care less. So, and I think most editors are probably that way. They just want to see some good work and they want it to be on time. So that was how I broke in, and since then it's just been a very pleasant maelstrom of of work and deadlines and a flurry of pages, you know.
And how many pages do you produce in a month, being all digital?
Let's see. I don't know. Probably, you know, it's pretty typical for comic book artists, as you know, to produce, you know, 22 to 23 pages a month, and that's a pretty comfortable pace for me. In the past, I've produced upwards of, you know, 30 or so, and that was when there was a short period of time where I was moonlighting between both my last few issues on my first run of Robin and also my first few issues of The Flash, and there was very little sleep involved, but I was producing probably, I don't know, 11 pages a week or something like that for about 2 months, I think. I could be, it's around in there, so I'm not sure. But honestly, it's such a blur, it's actually pretty hard to look back at it. it was just, you know, it was waking up and working and only taking breaks long enough to get something to eat and then go back to sleep, you know, after all the work was done. So it was pretty rough.
So you're not necessarily, so a lot of people would say, oh, digital, he's probably just pumping out the pages. I mean, it doesn't, other than that period of time, it seems like you're producing about the same number of pages as somebody who in the past might have been working, who might have been a fast worker but working on paper.
Correct.
And pencil.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that there's, I have a strong work ethic, which might go a long way to explaining how I've gotten so much work out in just a couple of years. But Working Digital does, let me see, Working Digitally does create opportunities to save time by creating, like you could, you know, you can resize and reuse backgrounds, certain, you know, even figure elements if you need to for a crowd of people. If you're drawing, let's say, the chest symbol for Superman's S on his chest, instead of drawing that every single time, you can, in Photoshop, use a path, which is like a vector art tool, and then you can distort it and put it and warp it on his chest to make it look like it's on there, which will save time and also make the pages more consistent. So I think that there's probably a... there's a correlation. I think I am faster than if I was drawing, because I'm the pages that I'm describing are pencils and inks. So I always produce pencils and inks on my own stuff, and I think that based on that, it is probably saves me at least 2 or 3 hours a page over you know over a whole issue or something like that on average because I work digitally. So it's a time saving device, but it's part of it is also that I've been, you know, writing the book during that time and had other side projects that I was working on or commissions or, you know, conventions or something like that. But it's just a little bit faster, but I think ultimately it gives you more accurate work. I know that whenever I was working traditionally, if I had invested half a day into a page and the background just wasn't working that well, I would be reticent to scrap the whole background because I would have to either, you know, erase the whole thing or white it all out or have to do a patch with paper and a Xerox machine. And in Photoshop, options like that come much easier. So I think that the pages, even if they took the exact same amount of time, I think that in general they're more, let me see, the end result is more close to what the artist wants it to be because you can tweak and move stuff around and stuff.
Oh, it's something I'm confused about. Can't you just, do you have to do like a pencil round and an ink round? Why can't you just, digitally, why can't you just do everything as ink?
Oh, you definitely, you can. the chapters of the book include a chapter about pencils, primarily just in case there was somebody who that was their goal, was just to produce pencils. The way that I work, since I'm providing inks, you know, my finished end result is just black and white inks. Whenever I'm drawing an in-between stage called the wireframes, first comes the roughs, which are just layouts, and then the wireframe drawings are very tight structure drawings. And those kind of take the place of breakdowns in a maybe a traditional comic book workflow. So it's just structure drawings that don't have indication of shadow or texture. And in that case, since I'm drawing all the wireframes in black, when it comes for time for me to ink the pages, a good deal of the structure work is already done for me. Then in the inks, I'm inking on top of structure that's already in black, so I don't have to trace out everything to enhance it. I just have to take it from there. So I understand why you're confused, but know that in the all-digital workflow, you are going from the wireframe stage is the closest thing to pencils, but it does not take as long as pencils, and then it gives you a shortcut whenever you get into your inks as well.
And what's to keep you from putting to making colorists and letterers obsolete?
Let's see. The colorists and letterers are still very essential to the process because in the end, the book focuses that the book the DC Comics Guide to Digitally Drawing Comics just focuses on creating the black and white line art. It focuses on up to that stage. From there, that basically has you know fulfilled the job requirements of an illustrator, and then you still pass it off to the letterer and to the colorist. I think the biggest candidate or potential casualty to working digitally or having ultra-clean pencils that can then go direct to color, the biggest potential casualty would be inkers. Inkers are finding their job foundations shrinking a little, and that's really unfortunate because if you have a good inker, they can really bring something to the pages. But there's just with the cleanliness of the pencils, an inker is not always needed, and then or if an artist is able to ink their own work, then it kind of cuts out the job of an extra inker as well.
I was just thinking that a couple years back before he passed away, Will Eisner had been involved with developing a lettering a font that was based on his handwriting and the way he he drew. So someone else was able to come in and put in and letter his graphic novels in his style on a computer. So I thought, well, you know, why couldn't you likewise? Is it that you wouldn't want to? I mean, I'm sure you could, right?
Oh, it's about the time frame and specializing in your in a job or whatever. Like I in the rough stage of laying out a comic book, I will often or almost every single page I will lay out where I think the caption should go for word balloons and narration captions and that sort of thing. However, and usually sometimes the editors will use that as a guide for the letterers. However, lettering. If someone does lettering well, it's an art form in itself because they have to incorporate where their captions go into the composition. So, to answer your question in a short way, I think that somebody who wants to take on doing lettering and coloring as well, they can do that, but it's just an entire another skill set, and it's just a few more things that you could possibly do poorly, which would actually ruin the page. You know what I mean?
Right.
So pencils and inks is usually enough for me. I do covers. I do colors for covers as well. Most of the covers that I work on, and even that though I'm too slow on it. I'm still learning ideas of color temperature and creating contrast with color, and the lettering stuff. There's just a whole other set of rules. So I think it's just like anything else. You would just have to learn that skill set to do it well, and it takes a while to do that.
Can anyone really tell the difference between penciled comics and digital? And the reason I ask is, I mean, you told the story before about San Diego Comic-Con where you were discovered by Richard Burning, and he didn't know until you told him.
It is possible. It depends on how you work. The goal of how I work is to make it look as traditional as possible because that's what I grew up with. That's what I love. I love the look of pen and ink work. So you might think back to earlier digital comics that might have looked too slick or too, they just looked too digital. There's something about it. You know, it looked too airbrushy in the colors and all the gradients were too soft and that sort of thing. Instead of using that, which is clearly digital, you instead use the same mindset of making the line work look like the regular traditional art, line work. So it looks a little dirtier. You make sure to texture things in the same way, such as I'm actually, as we speak, working on illustrating some tanks for the last issue of Run, Final Crisis Aftermath Run. And, you know, in the texturing of it, I could have left this open for the colorist, or I could have applied a grayscale texture to it that was just a gradient and said I was done with it. But that would have looked too mechanical. I wanted these to feel, you know, dirty and gritty. So I'm adding the dirt and the grit just like I would with a repeatograph if I was working traditionally. So I think that's the real difference. Is it depends on where your vantage point and where you want the artwork to end up. If your goal is to make it look, you know, too slick and extra digital, then it's easy to do that. If the goal is to instead to make it look like the comics that you loved and grew up with, then there's a way to do that as well. And that's basically the way that I teach in the how-to book.
I have no expertise in this at all, so I tell you that up front, but I'm thinking back to when Image Comics started, Rob Liefeld
Todd McFarlane.
Todd McFarlane. Uh-huh. It seemed like thinking back to those books that what made them look so different, the lettering, the explosions, the colors, I'm wondering if those were digital. Could they have been?
The coloring was digital. To my knowledge, none of the rest of it was digital. But I think that, you know, going a step beyond that, the part of what made those so much visually more interesting than some of the other comics that were happening at the time was that the artists were not afraid to experiment. Not all the experiments worked well, but there were a lot of them that did, and they weren't afraid to make real big splashy sort of pages and use different textures, and computer coloring was coming into its own at the time. Although now, whenever I think that most colorists, when they look back at the Image Comics, those first round of them, the extra digital, extra slick look that I was describing earlier probably makes them cringe, because there's a lot of that in those earlier books where it looks a little too airbrushy. Now, if you look at most comics, they're almost going back to a little bit of a of the coloring when it was done. I'm trying to think of when it was done in different film layers, where things you might look at the close-up of a face in the newer comics, and the shadows and the highlights that are created, even though it's in the computer, have kind of hard edges to them, where it almost looks like somebody could have drawn them out on a piece of film. They're not the extra super slick gradients that so clearly say this is digital. So I think that people are now, you know, everything's coming back around to let's use the digital tools, but use it in a way that creates the artwork that we all like, you know.
Mm. You know, the first time I saw comics drawn digitally was a couple years back. I was visiting and interviewing Chris Brown, who writes and draws the Hagar the Horrible comic strip, and it was the first time I'd seen the Wacom. And that was—I mean—it was just amazing to even think that it could be done.
Yeah, the first time I heard of the potential for it was it was around the time that Image Comics were coming out, and I was learning what computer coloring was. Like, why did these new comics look so much different than the more traditional comics? And at that time, I got my first scanner and got Photoshop and stuff. And of course, my computer could barely run Photoshop. It was not very
yeah.
It didn't have all the requirements. So working on anything high resolution was kind of out of the question for me. But that basically back in, I think that was 92 or 3 or something, that was planting the seeds for what I'm doing now. It's the idea of using all of the advantages of working digitally, which are versatility, creating new options. You know, it allows you to try new things on different layers, and if you don't like them, you don't have to commit to them, so it's not destructive to ideas because you can keep different versions. It's the idea of using all that stuff, but to still create something that in the end just looks like really good comics that we're used to seeing. It doesn't have to be completely foreign. So, absolutely. And the first time I ever saw a Wacom tablet, I as well was very blown away. I was used to using it like a mouse, or I was thinking of it that I would have to use it like a mouse. And so my first experiments were with it. It's like with a mouse, you move the mouse, then you pick it up, put it back down on a different part of the mouse pad, and then move it again. And that's not how a Wacom tablet is. You know, the bounds of the Wacom tablet are the bounds of your screen. So if you wanted to move to the right, you just do that all the way. There is a bit of a disconnect, but if after you work with it just like a mouse, it eventually clicks into place, you know, in your mind.
Mm. So if I couldn't draw with paper and pencil, am I going to be any better with a digital setup?
I do not think so. I think that the
that's what I thought. Yeah.
What you might be better at is if you have a fledgling design sense, then yes, because you could take elements that have already been drawn by someone else and lay them out in a way that, you know, you couldn't draw it all from scratch, but you can, if you knew how to use Photoshop, you could move around the figures and the background in a way that compositionally looks pleasing or storytelling-wise looks good. So it opens up for that sort of thing. But no, you still need to know the entire skill set of drawing comic books normally before you get into working digitally. But there's big shortcuts like working in perspective. You can create grids much faster, and if something's not working, you could scrap it or you can distort it to make the perspective more extreme and that sort of thing.
Hmm. All right, so let's say I'm ready to go digital. What essential supplies and equipment do I need to start?
Let's see. The essentials would be there's a program called, if you're doing it on a budget or something, then there's a program that's called Photoshop Elements that has a lot of the same pieces that you would need to do everything that's in the how-to book. The only thing I think it's really lacking, that Elements is lacking, is the ability to create actions, which is a way to automate certain things, like if you were going to resize a bunch of pictures in a row or something. But that's not essential, so you could still get your feet wet with working with a Wacom tablet and stuff. So essentially you would need Photoshop Elements. You would need, of course, a computer with, I don't know, at least a gig of RAM, I would say. And I'm not sure on processor speed, but most of the standard computers, if you bought right now, all have very good processors. So, and you would need a Wacom tablet. I use a 6x8 Wacom tablet. That is, I actually find that the larger the Wacom tablet, the worse it is. So bigger does not mean better when it comes to a Wacom tablet. I've seen the large 11x17 drafting Wacom tablets, and I can't use them. It's basically, it's trying to force you to draw with your shoulder, which is okay for larger, big strokes, like in if you're doing drafting or architecture, but not so much for the refined line work of a comic. So there exists like 3x4-inch Wacom tablets that are less expensive than larger ones. Those are actually pretty good to start off with. And then past that, let's see. Actually, that's about it. I mean, it would be good to, of course, in your computer have like something to make DVD or CD backups of your files once you get them done, and external hard drives and stuff to make backups as well. But really, that's the essential stuff. It's basically just a small Wacom tablet, a version of Photoshop, and then you know, just a just a monitor and something to make backups on. That's all you really need.
And when we started talking, we mentioned, and I wanted to come back to this, original art. Now, I, having been a comics fan and a reader for probably longer than you've been alive, I know how important original art is to comics artists, because they sell their art. You know, they produce it, and then they sell it, and a lot of times they'll make more from the original art than they made for actually being hired to do the page. So how do you create original art from things that are done on the computer?
Let's see. You can. There's two. I lay out in the DC Comics Guide to Digitally Drawing Comics. I lay out two different hybrid methods of working, and for them, they have a lot in common. So I'll just speak about them in general. But essentially, in the hybrid methods of working, the summary is that you're setting up and laying out the page digitally still. So you're working all your roughs all the way up to the tight structure drawings, either wireframes or breakdowns, depending on which hybrid method you're going for, all in the computer. And then you're printing. You then print instead of lightboxing or something in the old workflow. You instead print the structure that you've done onto the artboard in light blue. So you're printing it in place at actual size without having to trace it out in lightboxing or something, which is a time saver by itself. After that, you then execute the page the rest of the way traditionally. So in the hybrid workflows, it's essentially just working digitally as a layout tool. And for any comic book artist who's listening to this, at least if they're like me, they know that working on the layouts or the storytelling of a page is probably the most mentally taxing part of the job. It doesn't take the longest amount of time, hours, if you were just to count the hours, but it's very difficult just from a concentration standpoint to make sure that you're taking into consider all the elements and of the story that you need to include. And if you're working on paper, it can get really frustrating, at least it did for me. So working digitally, it opens up a lot of versatility for you to save time and to make sure that if someone's punching, that all their proportions are correct, you know, that you could flip the composition of the punch so that they're facing the opposite direction. You can really tweak stuff in the layout before you commit to it being on paper, and that's very, very valuable. I know that when I'm working on commissions at a convention, the entire time I'm thinking, oh, I wish I had some undos, you know, that I could go back in this process, and you know, or I could select his hand and rotate it, or you know, make it a little smaller or bigger. And those are things that's really where I think the biggest advantage comes from working digitally. So if you're working in a hybrid way, you get the best of all worlds. You get really clean, proper storytelling with the correct, you know, proportions and anatomy, because you can take the time to do that in Photoshop. And then once you're happy with that, then you commit to it being on paper, and then at the end of that process, you have originals that you can still sell.
Well, we're just about to run out of time. I want to ask you one more question. You're a young guy, Freddie. What characters in comics do you still dream of drawing?
Ooh, totally Superman. I'm a total Superman buff. He's always been my favorite character, definitely. And I've got to draw him a few times, but it's never enough, really. I would love to at some hopefully not too far away date to get to draw Superman in a, you know, in his regular title or in a miniseries idea that I have. You know.
Well, you did a great job with him on the cover of your book, and I saw on your website that original art is actually for sale, so we'll
yes,
mention that. And folks, you can order Freddie E. Williams II's new book, The DC Comics Guide to Digitally Drawing Comics, at great bookstores everywhere. Or you can order it on MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com, or Amazon.com. And check out Freddie's website, www.freddieart, that's F-R-E-D-D-I-E, freddieart.com. And you can also become his friend on Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, or ComicSpace. And Freddie, thanks so much for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Thank you for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it.
My pleasure. Good luck. It's a very interesting book. I plan to turn my daughter onto it immediately.
Great. Good. Thank you,
Freddie. All right. Good luck.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And folks, for more interviews with your favorite comic book, comic strip, and graphic novel artists and writers, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com, where you can listen to my earlier conversations with Josh Neufeld, Patrick McDonald, Ray Billingsley, Jerry Scott, Rick Kirkman, Jim Borgman, John Rosenberg, Stefan Pastis, Mark Tatulli, Mort Walker, Dennis Kitchen, Drew Friedman, Dave Gibbons of Watchmen, Joe Sinnott, Howard Cruz, Mark Chiarello, Gene Colan, and many more. And please think about writing an online review of Mr. Media, casting a vote for Mr. Media, or marking Mr. Media as one of your favorites. That's whether you listen on Blog Talk Radio, TrueSlant, Digital Journal, Vox, Podcast Pickle, Mediafly, Podfeed.net, Blueberry, Zencast, Current, or Odeo. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. Or subscribe to Mr. Media's blog on the Amazon Kindle Reader. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media. Thanks for listening, everybody.